Welcome to La Liga Weekly as Barcelona press the reset button. Yes, club legend returns, values re-established, kids brought in. It's been a while. Yes, they lacked a little bit of punch against Espanyol, but it'll be fine when Messi's fit. Well, the arrival of technology into football hasn't entirely removed the emotional inclination to give dodgy penalties when there are 74,000 people urging their hero to be successful, which bodes well for the humans when the Earth is entirely run by robot artificial intelligence in about 3 years' time. Poor plucky Granada, meanwhile, had a man sent off against elitist Real Madrid for nothing more than trying to kick Vinicius Jr. out of the stadium. Real Madrid atop after Real Sociedad were held by Valencia. Sevilla had to fight back for a point against Alaves in a match where the football was replaced by a bar of soap. Simeone came out against his own right wing as a strategy of crossing the ball towards Griezmann and Correa surprisingly struggled to break down Osasuna. Fran Escobar announced his own sacking after Elche's hopeless performance against Betis. We'll have a look at that and the other scores, including the embarrassment of Cadiz having 53% of possession in their game with predictable, catastrophic results. Terry Gibson is being linked with the vacancy at Manchester United. Michael Carrick is the caretaker interim manager, but there are plans for a transitional interim coach to take over. Zidane doesn't want the job because his wife, I think, believes Nolito's story about his daughter turning green while she lived in Manchester, and she doesn't fancy it. So, we're going to start there, Terry, aren't we? Because Zinedine Zidane is... Here's a question for you. Is he good enough to manage in the Premier League?
Don't worry. My brother's been born in a weekend. The amount of times I've heard people be disrespectful to Zinedine Zidane. Let's forget the stuff as a player. I mean, one of the best players that's ever played the game. But then he's managed for about five seasons, roughly, give or take. He's left in the middle of some, joined in the middle of some, and won three Champions Leagues consecutively. He went a four-year period without losing, being beaten in the Champions League. And yet people still say, oh, no, I'd rather Brendan Rodgers or I'd rather Pochettino. Based on what? I don't get it. I really irritates me. It's a similar procedure to when Pep come to Manchester City. Everybody said, oh, well, Barcelona, he won Champions Leagues there, and, great team, but anyone could have managed that team. That was false. That was fake news, which comes on to my second rant. That was fake news. He didn't. He built that team. There were good players there, but he made significant changes. He brought young players into the team. And for people to question Zidane based on... I did a bit of research on this. The current Premier League managers, rightly so, the Premier League regarded as the biggest league in Europe, the highest profile league in Europe, the richest league in Europe, getting the most expensive managers in Europe. Between them, Pep, Klopp and Tuchel are the only managers in the Premier League that have won Champions Leagues. Between them, they've won four. I've worked it out. Between them, that's about 50 years worth of management. Jurgen Klopp's been a manager for 20 years and won it once. Pep's won it twice. He only won it twice with Barcelona. Since then, he's been managed by Munich and Manchester City. Tuchel won it for the first time when he hasn't had as many years as Klopp and Pep. So for people to denigrate, I think that's the right word, the achievements of Zidane because he had a group of players that were pretty good. They weren't winning it three times on the trot before. They haven't won it three times on the trot since. So it really irritates me when people just quickly go, I'd rather Ten Hag from Ajax. Based on what, he's good. And all these are good managers. Don't get me wrong, I'm not moaning about Pep, Klopp, Tuchel. Conte hasn't won it. All good managers. Ten Hag, great, good manager. I can understand why big clubs would be interested in taking him as a manager. But Zidane is in that category. And if you've got Zidane, I think it would have been an honour for Manchester United to have had Zidane as manager. I don't think it's going to happen. And I think it would have been a privilege for an A-list manager. That's what they need to be standing on the bench at Old Trafford. Maybe against Pep Guardiola or Klopp or Tuchel, he's in the same company. And then for me to hear people say, oh, a friend of my son's got in the car, gave them a lift at the weekend, and he stayed in the back of the car. Yeah, I don't know if Zidane would be, I was driving him to a pub and Man United were losing. And my son's a Man United fan. And his mate in the back went, "Oh, yeah, I don't know if Zidane." And my son went, don't wipe my dad out. And I was bristling. I went, no, and explained my theory. So I just wish that people would have a bit more respect for people's achievements and not just say, "Oh, he had Modric and Ronaldo." And
I wonder whether it's because he doesn't have an obvious, he doesn't have a story of his management. Does he doesn't have a philosophy, for want of a better word. There's no project with Zidane. He just came in, sorted out Real Madrid, and won those trophies with them. So you think, well, okay, well, that's not enough.
Did he bang ketchup?
Yeah.
He's a simple manager. In terms of, he keeps everything simple, similar to Ancelotti, who he was an assistant with. His man management is good if you get on with him and he likes you and you don't fall out with him. And he keeps it simple, and players like that. Players like the fact they need to know what their jobs are, and that's it. And then his man management skills are second to none. He has a core of players that follow him in terms of they follow his leadership skills. And he just keeps it simple. And he knows, Christ's sake, Zidane knows football. That's my point. You know, people go, "Oh, but it's not as complicated football as people think and make out." And Zidane is a classic example of making things, just keeping things simple. Don't complicate it. Get good players, which is obviously, 90% of the job. He's not going to be winning the Champions League with substandard players for anybody else. But it's not easy managing these big egos, superstar footballers, and he managed that really comfortably.
It's a job in its own right, isn't it? That and Ancelotti has done it well, hasn't he, over the years? Whereas, who would you want?
We're hearing Pochettino, aren't we? We're hearing Pochettino slightly whinging a bit about, got to deal with Neymar and Messi and Mbappe. It's not easy,
Yeah.
Try telling that to Fran Escribar this week.
Yeah.
It hasn't got the... I think his team are better than what they've been playing, but that's a different story, but it makes life easy when you've got great players. And Pochettino, I think, is making it known, isn't he, quite clearly, that he's interested in the Man United job and wants to move on from PSG. So it isn't easy managing these superstar players, but Zidane made it easy at Real Madrid.
Is his lack of English an issue?
Yep, I think it would be. I don't think it would be enough to stop him coming to England. He's a man of few words, though, as well.
Suffering. We have to suffer. Just learn to say that in English, and then start every press conference that way.
He knows how to handle press conferences. He knows how to handle team talks. But it would be, but he wouldn't be the first manager that's come to England with minimal English spoken. Football English wouldn't take him too long to get to grips with. I know that sounds daft, but I used to be able to take training sessions in Spain in Spanish, believe it or not. But my Spanish is pretty awful, but I knew how to string together enough words in Spanish to put on a training session. Zidane could probably be able to do that. We have no proof that he doesn't speak any English, because he doesn't speak much at all, to be honest. Yeah. He speaks as little as possible. But I just think his presence at a big club is deserved. And should be respected. His achievements should be respected. The bloke's a legend, to be honest.
Yeah. But his wife doesn't want to live in Manchester because she's worried about the weather.
Yeah.
Apparently. Could be fake news.
Apparently, exactly. No, there's no such thing as fake news, surely.
Let's do the other one. We'll get to the football, I promise you. But you're also annoyed by the Aguero. Aguero's a legend. We know he's got this ill.
Yep.
He's got a heart problem. They need to check it out. We're waiting for an official announcement, but that's not good enough, is it, apparently?
No, I got a phone call at the weekend on Saturday evening about the breaking news of Aguero retiring, and it was from a radio station to go on air, and I turned it down because I said, "Is it confirmed?" And they went, "Oh, no, Fabrizio Romano has tweeted it." I said, "Well, that's not confirmation. Where's that come from? Have the club said anything? Has Aguero said anything?" It turned out I was right to turn it down because I think it's alleged that a text between Aguero and Semih Nasri where Aguero said that he might have to retire. Now, it's common knowledge. Everyone knows what might happen. So it's why not allow a player of any player, but particularly a player in Aguero, with Aguero's status, the dignity of breaking the news, releasing the news when it's confirmed, rather than this thirst and this hunger, this desire to be the first to break news. It's childish, to be honest, to be that first one, to be the one with the most followers on social media, to break news that isn't true. And in this case, I get it with the transfer market and the transfer window. We know the rules and that it's a jungle out there. Everyone's trying to be the first to break anything. But this is different. This is a player that's joined a new club at a difficult period because he was injured to start with, comes into the team, scores in a Clásico, gets his start, and then worryingly has this heart issue. It wouldn't be a massive surprise if he does choose to retire. He's 33, been playing first-team football since he was 15 years old. But this is the first time this has happened to him on the football pitch. So I don't see the rush from Aguero. I think Barcelona will have available the best, you know, medical people in the world to discuss it with him, to go for a procedure. And it just annoyed me at the weekend, this rush, this childish rush to be the first to break news. Something which should be allow a player to have the dignity to decide in his own time, announce it. There may be a press conference this week, but please, a bit of respect for what should be clarified and confirmed, as opposed to, oh, I'm the first to know. Nonsense. I clean that up.
Uh-huh. Yes. I agree. It's totally, you know, speculating about who Barcelona are going to sign in January is one thing, isn't it? But, you know, speculating a guy's health and you know, it's just, there's no need for that, is there? He's a legend and, you know, wish him well. Shall we do the game? Shall we do Barcelona's?
All off my chest good. Now. All good. Off my chest. I've been calm down. Take a deep breath.
So, Barcelona fans voted with their feet or with their bums on seats, Terry, didn't they? 37,000 yes. up to 74,000. Suggests that Xavi is a popular appointment. You're the expert. You give us your verdict. I thought they started all right, but to be fair, Espanyol had some very sitters. You would have to say, wouldn't you? To chances to have got something, or to won this game. I thought the penalty was a bit dodgy. VAR is people operating it in the end of the day, isn't it? And they allowed the penalty to stand. Everything broke in Xavi's direction doesn't mean that everything's fixed. But so where do you sit on his first game?
Well, I thought it was excellent for an hour. I could see the slight differences in the style of Barcelona as well.
Yeah.
There was more runs in behind the defence. I thought that the wingers stayed wide. And then when they came in field, the fullbacks pushed on. Jordi Alba in particular, Mingueza, they clearly need a proper right back. He is a central defender playing right back. So the balance was lacking in terms of most of the good play was down the left because of the way they were playing down the left flank with Jordi Alba racing into the space.
Just need some 38-year-old to sign. Alba's.
Yeah. Grant, you mentioned that the attendance figures. Mm-hmm. 10,000 turned up to see Xavi. 10,000 more turned up to see Dani Alves. So immediately you can see that there's belief and they think there's life being breathed back into Barcelona. But it's going to be so tough for Xavi until he gets the injured players back. Is that ever going to happen? It's Pedri's broke down again. Dembele, we don't know what's going to happen with Dembele. So it's tough at the moment. The squad on paper looks big enough, but the injured players is Ansu Fati. They're a big loss to Xavi at the moment. Until he gets those back, Serginho Dest right back is injured. Then it's going to be tough for him, including the Champions League this week. But I agree with you. The penalty was, I thought initially it was a really bad decision. And then when you see the trailing leg of Cabrera, it does catch Memphis, but he's already on his way down. Was there enough of an issue there, an error, to overturn it on VAR because of that trailing leg? Probably not. In the last 20, 25 minutes of the game, Espanyol should have won it, to be honest.
Yeah.
It was a lucky escape. Diamata missed an absolute sitter, didn't he? Raúl Thomas looked sharp and lively and caused them problems pretty much on his own for most of the game. And joined by other players towards the end of the match, he looked a real threat to Barcelona. The same problems lay for Xavi to see defensively. They did try and win the ball back quicker. Gavi is spectacular. Nico Gonzalez was fantastic again. So there's lots of positives, the biggest one being the result, because they needed the win. And that will install a little bit more belief in the Barcelona players as well. But I think it's there's a lot of work to do. But I think he will be helped when the injured players are back. But as I said, we've been saying that all season now. So he's just having to make do with what he's got. Introduced another couple of youngsters, Ilyas Çakır, another 17-year-old. I thought he did all right in the first half. And I have to say, Abde Ezelzouli, he was spectacular when he came on. I mean, he's 19. He's one of the older ones.
Yeah, old man.
Interesting player, wasn't he? Direct. And when he ran at players, he really did have success. So Xavi certainly brought Ricky Pujon. So it's a young group of players. Xavi will enhance their careers, certainly with his coaching and his methods and his style of playing, what he wants from his players. But I saw signs immediately, to be honest, of a different type of Barcelona performance.
So what's the medium, actually, what's the short-term plan? Because is the plan, there's no money, unless they trade a bit, unless they get a free transfer, get a loan. So are you going down the route of trying everything you can to get a loan player or two in January? Or do you take the Xavi dividend, which is people are going to be very patient with him if he pursues trying to bring these guys through? Because I agree with you. There's no point in hanging by your fingernails waiting for all of the injured players to be fit, because there's no sign that they're going to be. So which way do you go? Is the project developing young players now?
Yeah, and to the extent, I would be quite controversial in saying I would sacrifice Frankie de Jong as well.
Well, you'd sell him?
Yep.
Yeah.
Not because I think he's a bad player. The opposite. I think he's a terrific player. I think he's been a great signing for Barcelona. But I think he's the one asset they have that they have cover for. So if you consider, we've seen the emergence of Gavi, Pedri last season, Nico Gonzalez, still got Sergio Busquets. If you are desperate to raise some funds, he's the obvious one, isn't he? He's the one that clubs are going to be looking at.
Yeah.
Linked with other clubs, linked with Manchester City, and they could then get in excess of what they paid for him, which might help them bring some other players in.
My issue with that is that you're just chucking it into it's a billion, isn't it? It's over a billion of debt. So you sell him for what? 80 million, 90 million?
If they could use the money for transfers.
Yeah. But I'm not sure
they could bring Samuel Eto'o back.
Iniesta's on a free, isn't
Messi.
He?
Yeah. No, but I think that if you're looking at having some funds available to strengthen the squad, I don't know how the finances would work at Barcelona, but with the emergence of those young players now, the ones they would like to move on, they haven't been able to do so. So that's why I'm suggesting that maybe could they do without Frankie de Jong? I think it'd be a blow. Because I think he's a terrific player, but it's the one area of the pitch where they're producing outstanding
I know what you mean,
players.
But you want some bona fide current world-class players in Barcelona's team, don't you? And he's that, isn't he? He's one you'd consider.
Yes.
You know, if you're doing a World 11, you'd think about him. I'm not saying you'd be in it, but you'd chuck his name in the and there aren't many at Barcelona that, I don't know who else there would be. I agree, terrific young players coming through, but I don't know. I don't think they'd get all the money to spend. I don't think it's as simple as you sell him for 90 million, you get 90 million to spend. I think I'd rather see them scrimping, you know, trying to get, you know, free transfers again next summer.
Yeah.
They did all right with, you know, Memphis, good signing, wasn't he, on a free?
Yeah.
You know, I wonder, I'd rather that was the path they went down. But the Barca fans, let us know what you think. Would you? You know, are you prepared to sacrifice Frankie de Jong to try and get some wedge to spend in the transfer market or not? Or would you rather sort of...
I must reiterate, that's not criticism of Frankie de Jong.
Yeah.
In an ideal world, yes, stay at Barcelona. He's a classic Barcelona player.
Yeah.
And I guess there is talk of him going into the holding midfield position when Busquets does eventually retire. because he's significantly younger. So that's an issue further down the line as well. But I just think he's the one player that, you know, they're not going to get awful amount of money for Coutinho, for Umtiti, for maybe Clement Longley, a decent amount if he's one of those that they decide to move on. But Frankie de Jong is the one that stands out as the player that they could get a lot of money for, which might help. But as you say, you know, who knows what would happen to the finances if they do lose him. So in that case, I'd rather keep him.
Yeah.
They don't have the money to spend, definitely. He's a fantastic player.
It shows where Barca are at, doesn't it, as an institution, that when you talk about selling players, you're no longer talking about selling players that they don't want. You're at a stage where you talk about selling a player that they clearly do want. Like, obviously, they want him to stay, but if there is no money to spend, as I say, you know, I'd still hang on to him. Benfica, they beat Benfica this weekend. Midweek, they're through, and that
Tuesday tomorrow night.
Yep. Makes it a much healthier position. Do you think they will?
I have no idea. Yeah, I think it's possible. I do. I think with the feel-good factor of a new manager, the confidence of the win against Espanyol, they are at home. Away from home, I'd say it might be a bit more dubious. I expect them to get the job done against Benfica and go through now. Something I didn't think they would do two or three games ago. But the way results are panned out in the group, it's giving them they've got to grasp this opportunity. I think the last game is Bayern Munich, isn't it? So they've got to get this. Yeah. Got to get done now.
Right, let's have a look elsewhere. Let's go to Real Madrid, shall we? Talking about managers who just get stuff done. Ancelotti, top of the league. Real Madrid, good performance. I thought, you know, good attacking performance. I've got not a lot of sympathy for Granada because it reminded me, old listeners will remember the 1990 World Cup, Terry, Cameroon against Argentina.
Oh yes,
yes. If you've never seen that, by the way, go on YouTube and have a look at that.
It was the striker that was running through Caniggia.
And Benjamin Massing was the Cameroon player who got him in the end. It wasn't quite that against Vinicius, but there were repeated attempts to kick the guy up in the air, weren't they? A 4-1 win away to Granada. Good goals, good performances. shock team selection, Terry, Modric, Kroos, Casemiro.
Seen those three before together.
Fullbacks were back. So, you know, a lot of players, as we say with Barcelona, you know, you start to wonder, will these players ever be all fit together? But they're not far off. And we'll, you know, push Bale to one side. I don't think we're ever going to see him significantly play a part again, are we? So
no, that's hugely disappointing, isn't it, for Real Madrid?
Yeah.
I'm going back to controversy. Ridiculous. He's been out there long, plays for Wales, comes back injured again. If Ancelotti has the patience now to use him again significantly this season, other than use him as cannon fodder when he's resting other players, I'd be surprised. So I don't think he's done himself any favours. Unfortunately for Gareth Bale, his legacy now at Real Madrid has been tarnished because of this crossover between Real Madrid and Wales. And so, I don't think we're going to see a lot more of him. Militao, I think, maybe the one that comes in instead of Nacho at the back alongside Alaba. Other than that, you could argue, you know, it's no Hazard at the weekend again. So he's another one that could be considered to be in their strongest team. But, you know, they were fantastic. Absolutely brilliant. Sticky period when Luis Suarez got the goal back for Granada. But Real Madrid saw that off. And in the second half were brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I mean, they're brilliant in the first half. As I said, there was one sticky period where you thought Granada, because Granada are not bad attacking-wise, absolutely hopeless defensively. Do you think that was a foul by Montiel? I can't believe he complained.
Yeah.
I can't believe the manager complained and got to the extent he got sent off. But Moreno, he's complaining. I think I saw at one stage he was lip reading saying no foul. Diabolical foul. To the extent that Ancelotti had to take Vinicius off because he thought there was going to be more trouble regarding players hacking him down. He's having a brilliant season. Benzema having a brilliant season, and Ancelotti has given high praise to the three midfield players, but almost saying he doesn't have to tell them anything anymore. And they do far more than he expects every single game. I mean, Modric was chasing 60 yards to go and close down the goalkeeper when they were 3-1 up against 10 men.
And, you're giving Modric a new contract, brilliant, aren't you, if you're Real Madrid?
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah. Why wouldn't just forget the age, the number?
Yeah.
It's based on what he's doing again this season. Why? Yeah. I mean, Ancelotti made the point. He said they were brilliant in the past, they're brilliant in the present. And he said, who knows, that those three together could still be in 10 years' time. But we have made plans to replace them eventually. And that's when he said, I don't have to tell him anything anymore. Mm. And the three of them play together. They know what they're doing. It's a brilliant midfield three. Yeah. And Real Madrid are great form at the moment. Best performance of the weekend.
They've got Camavinga, they've got Valverde. They've got two very, very good young midfielders.
Yep. Danny Ceballos is still there. Mm.
Yeah.
Isco could play in midfield if need be. No, there's nothing wrong with Real Madrid squad. You've asked me the question in previous podcasts, do they need to strengthen in the January window? And I said no. Unless someone comes available that they weren't aware of, Mbappe. No, I don't think they need to go into the market. They've got fantastic squad.
Yeah, yeah. It's just I still wonder about the depth in defensive areas. When they're all fit, it's good, isn't it? But not a massive amount of depth there, is there? But there we are. So Real Madrid have got Sheriff this weekend, who they lost to in the first game. So if they lose that, if they were to lose that, it throws that group open again, doesn't it, with Inter?
Yes.
However,
I think a draw gets them through, doesn't it?
Yeah. You know, we should revert to the norm and assume that Real Madrid should beat Sheriff, shouldn't we? That's what should happen in that game.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. Well, so where are we going next? A brief stop at what was the top of the league, Real Sociedad 0. Valencia 0. What's the pick of that? I mean, Valencia are a difficult team, aren't they? Yeah, it's awkward. It's always been awkward, hasn't it, playing against the borderless team?
Yeah.
So what did you make of it?
An aggressive team with no centre forward.
Yeah.
That are willing to concede possession. I mean, it's almost a Getafe, isn't it? But with better players.
Yeah.
Real Sociedad found them hard to break down. I thought it was a really good game.
Yeah.
I like the fact that Valencia are aggressive against the team that were top of the league. I like the fact they're competitive. I'd rather use that term rather than aggressive, but aggression being competitive, you know, it's they're not crossing the line. And they, in the end, had a couple of really good chances at the end. Maxi Gomez had a header blocked. Jose Gaya nearly got on the end of a fantastic delivery into the box from a deep free kick. Probably should have scored at the far post. But Real Sociedad were good as well. And I loved the fact that despite having Aritz and Estundo sent off with 15 minutes ago, the substitutions were positive and they were still showed a desire to go and win the game with 10 men, which led to a fantastic last 15, 20 minutes of the game. So I thought it was a really good game. It certainly wasn't a dull 0-0. Cillessen was outstanding in the goal for Valencia, which tells you that Real Sociedad had their fair share of chances. A really competitive game, a good watch. You know, obviously it would have been better with a goal or two. But I think, you know, positives for both teams. Valencia for getting a draw away from home against the team at the top of the league. Slightly surprising that they're playing with Guedes up front, pretty much on his own. Good player that he is. He's not, I don't see him as a centre forward, particularly when you're sitting deep and you're looking to get the ball, which they do. When they break, it's invariably a long pass. So you would imagine someone like Maxi Gomez, Marcos Andre would be more suited to that role. But in fairness to Maxi Gomez, his form hasn't been great this year. So if they can get him back in form again, he would be a better option than Guedes. And then Guedes would revert back to his wide position. But they need to be lucky with injuries. Valencia, not the biggest squad. But they're competitive. And everyone knows they're going to be in for a hard game against them. So I thought it was a really good game. We really enjoyed that one.
Atleti beat Osasuna by 1-0. It was a late goal as well, wasn't it? Felipe, his celebration was better than the rest of the game.
Really impressive.
Yeah. I mean, I could do that, but obviously it's a waste because it's a podcast, isn't it?
John, do it.
Hang on, there we are. Right. Oh, ow, my back.
It was a somersault without touching the floor, wasn't it?
Well, he touched the floor eventually, yeah. But yeah, he just
without his hands.
Yes, head over heels.
I'm sure there's a technical name for it.
Yes. And then Simeone afterwards picked on the right side of his team, didn't he? And said, we don't move around on the right side, but we're fluent on the left side of his team. Yeah, that was his analysis. What did he make of the game?
Well, I guess that's natural, though, because Carrasco has more of the ball. Carrasco is on the ball all the time. Brilliant player. Whereas on the other side, Correa drifted inside and didn't stay in the wide position. Bersalico isn't as attack-minded as Trippier. So I think that's the point that Simeone was probably making. Hermoso didn't push forward. They went to a back four at the weekend. My issue with Atletico is I just think they're too methodical in their build-up play. And it's a point I've made in previously that it's very accurate, but it's very methodical and slow, and it's precise, but it does allow teams to get bodies back behind the ball, and then it's hard to break teams down other than going wide, crossing the ball, in this case to the likes of Griezmann, Correa, who are not going to trouble the three Osasuna central defenders in the air. So slightly surprised that, I guess for Atletico, it'd be a relief they actually score from a set piece, because they don't do it as often as they should. And it's something they need to add to their game. But it was a vital win. They were the better team, but Osasuna were quite prepared to look that way in terms of, we're going to sit back, we're going to keep a back five, we're going to have hard-working players in midfield, we're just going to leave the two up front and see if we can get up the field now and then. So when you're slow attacking-wise as Atletico, if Osasuna are out of shape, it's quite easy to get back in shape, because Atletico do take so long to get the ball into a more attacking position. To really cause a threat. No Joao Felix, Suarez was on the bench, Rodrigo de Paul was on the bench as well after they both came back from South American international duty. So it was a classic Atletico performance, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Lots of possession.
Got there.
Didn't really open them up too much, but eventually got there with a nice near post header from a corner.
Sevilla 2-2 against Alaves with a 92nd minute equaliser. And boy, it rained a bit, Terry, in this game, it's fair to say, isn't it? It was like a bar of soap through Bono's hands when he tried to save the penalty. Missed opportunity. But yeah. Alaves actually are in decent form, aren't they? So it's, you know, it's
oh, they're very good form. Last five games, picked up 11 points.
Yeah.
And when you see that this season's total is 14, it tells you how they've turned the corner. Yeah. And they're playing well. José Luis, a player that gets amongst the goals. Great header from Victor LaGuardia to open the scoring. And if you go behind against Alaves, it's not easy to come back. They're strong, determined, well-organised. They're not going to score loads and loads of goals. So you run that risk. If you're not marking properly at a set piece and they go 1-0 up, it's going to be hard work to get back in it. If you concede a second goal with a penalty, then it's going to be hard to get back in it. And I didn't think Sevilla were going to do it. I think the conditions didn't help. And if anyone hasn't seen it, I think it was on the verge of being abandoned. It was that bad. So it was awful conditions. It doesn't often rain like that in Sevilla. It doesn't often rain in Sevilla. But when it did at the weekend, it was really bad for the players. So it was they were lucky to salvage a point in the end, Sevilla, from that game. Number of players missing, though, in fairness, through injury and whatever. But still, as we've said, reiterated before on the podcast, that they've got a strong enough squad to deal with that. When you look at the players that were available, the players that started, it should be a game they're winning. But fair play to Alaves. Great credit to Javier Calleja and his Alaves team for turning the corner, and as you can see there, win-win-draw for Alaves in their recent games. 14 points, they had 3 points prior to those. So encouragement there for the teams down at the bottom. You can turn it around, pick up form, get a bit of confidence. You can still get yourself back into the pack.
Yes, so I'm showing the table to the Patreons. If you want to become a Patreon, go to patreon.com/LTEL. And then you can join in for a small amount of money and help to keep us going. Thank you to all the Patreons for your continued support. We're going to have a very brief ad break now for everybody to share. And hopefully, you'll find... Anyway, we might get some money out of it one day, Terry. We'll see. and we'll crack on with the rest of the games in a minute. Welcome Welcome back, everybody. Shall we start with the sacking, Terry? It's not poor old Franescu Bar. So how quickly did they sack him after the game? So they must have gone straight away and told him, because he hadn't done the press conference, but he still did the press conference. So he went and announced his own sacking in the post-match press conference, which is just bizarre, wasn't it? So Elche had lost 3-0 against Betis. Now, to me, right.
He's lucky he got the second half, John. By the sounds of it. That's not my opinion. I'm just saying it sounds he was lucky to still be there sitting on the bench at half time because they're 3-0 down in 27 minutes.
Yeah.
Is it a sackable offence?
Couple of terrible errors. And to me, another dodgy penalty. I didn't think that was a penalty. But I get it, like you say, with the Barca one, once.
Yeah,
it's the level. It's the bar where VAR is going to get involved. I, fair enough. I don't want VAR. You know, I wish they were quicker if they're not going to get involved. I wish it was like, oh, I don't know, took me to toss up, get on with it. I wish it was that quick. Because on close examination, I wouldn't have given a penalty. I just thought it was contact between players making challenges. I thought he's halfway down before the contact came anyway.
Yep, I agree with that.
Yeah. So there we are. Should they have sacked him? So, yeah, what do you make of the game?
Oh, but the game, it was much of a game, was it? It was done and dusted in, as I say, 27 minutes. The defensive errors were appalling. The penalty was debatable, of course. But it's been a slight surprise because Elche, I thought we were going in the right direction with 6 games without a win, 2 points from the last 6 games. A degree of panic, I think, from the people that are running the club. They've obviously invested a little bit of money in the summer transfer window. They have a better squad than they had last year. A manager that kept them up last year against the odds. 6 games without a win, a couple of draws in those 6. You have to look at the fixtures who they've played against. You can't just go 6 games without a win. I think Real Madrid are in those 6 games as well. Perhaps the 3-0 down at half-time. That's when you really do need someone to take time to consider what the options are rather than were they going into the game on the back of 5 games without a win, thinking if we get beat at home to Betis, which it wouldn't be the biggest surprise. Betis lost a couple before this, but showed good form in this game. And it wouldn't be the biggest surprise in the world if Betis won at Elche. Would that be a sackable defeat? Probably not. But I think the nature of the 3-0 deficit at half-time, and it could have been more, a catastrophic first 45 minutes, obviously, made them make the decision. And I joked when I said he was lucky to get a second half because clearly that decision was made at the half-time break during the first half.
It looks like they didn't want him, doesn't it? Because that's a bad result. Villarreal, they lost 4-1. Other than that, so the previous game was a 2-2 draw against Mallorca, a 2-1 defeat against Real Madrid, 1-0 against Alaves, who are in form, a 2-2 against Espanyol. A 2-1 defeat against Rayo Vallecano. So, okay, it's a six-match defeat, a six-match no-win run.
No wins.
2 points. You don't have to sack him.
No big defeat. There's no big defeat there, is there? This is the first big defeat. And actually, 3-0 in the end isn't a massive defeat, but it was the nature of it being 3-0 down after half an hour and game finished. So I agree with you. I think they've jumped the gun a little bit too quickly on this one. And maybe they should have gone away, not done anything after the game.
Yeah.
And then talked about it today and then think about the other options and how he's done previously, what he could do in the future. What is the best option to keep them up? Because that's what their intention is, to stay out of the relegation zone. So it'd be interesting to see how things turn out, who they bring in. But I think they've panicked there.
Yeah, there might be a plan. You know, we're recording, when are we? Late Monday morning, noon Monday. They might have an Argentine coach ready to go, or you know, there might be a plan which would explain why they've sacked him at the. It's a trigger point where you can sack him, isn't it? A bad performance and a 3-0 defeat. If you want rid of him,
just the 3-0 defeat, it's the 3 goals in half an hour.
Yeah,
that was the. So it's a long 60 minutes of football when you're 3-0 down at home. You're on the back of a 5 game win this run.
Yeah.
In win this runs, it doesn't compare to Levante. I've ended up there today.
Go on, let's move on to that, shall we?
Levante, yeah. And they were good. Friday night, they were good. I thought they should beat Athletic Club. They had more shots on target, a lot more possession than Athletic. Athletic had 32% possession against a team that haven't won in 22 games over the last season and this season.
Yeah.
I don't know how you cope if you're a player like that. I've been in teams where you've had runs of games, but I'm not sure it's ever got to any near 10 or above 10 or anywhere around that figure. To go for 22, people like Morales and Postigo and Miramon and Roger Marti and one or two others that have played in probably most of those games, it must seem like the hardest thing in the world at the moment is to actually win a game of football. And they deserve to win this one. As I said, they had 68% possession against 32 of Athletic Club. I will come to Athletic in a minute. I think there were signs of improvement for Levante. They didn't look a team that are rubbish, that haven't won for 22 games now. But it just, as I say, that mentality, that belief where you just think it looks an impossible task for Levante to believe they can actually win a game of football. They've had a mini pre-season in international break. They went away to training camp. They look fit. They look sharp. They just couldn't put the ball in the back of the net. And, you know, it's life is pretty tough. But 22 games, they can still get out relegation. So I look at them and I think, you know, if they can get that belief back, it might just be one win. And, you know, and then they can turn the corner. I talked about them maybe having three managers this season. I thought the signs were good on Friday night's match. I think that Pereira, with this mini break, has had the pre-season, took them away. I don't know if he's got them fitter, but certainly more organised. And the signs were good, but they desperately need a win and quickly. So Athletic Club.
Yeah.
Oh, we use this narrative all the time, don't we? Oh, if they had a centre forward. It's not as simple as that. It's not that because, yes, we know they haven't got the traditional big number nine that they've had usually. You know, it's a traditional position in Athletic Club. But they've got Iñaki Williams, they've got Raul Garcia, they've got Asier Villalibre, they've got Sanset who can play up there as well. But I would be critical of those players if they were missing chance after chance after chance. They didn't have anyone to stick the ball in the back of it. But they had five shots and two on target. They're the lowest scorers pretty much in the league.
I think they are. 11, which I think is the lowest, isn't it?
Yep. But they've got the best defensive record. They've only conceded eight.
Oh, no, Alaves have only got 10. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. And they've only conceded eight, which is the best in the league.
Yeah.
So there needs to be some give from Marcelino in terms of, yes, we're hard to break down and hard to score against.
Yeah, but have an attack every now and again.
But have some sort of attack.
Yeah.
So I don't know what it'd be. Maybe a changing system.
Yeah.
Maybe go to three at the back. They've got an abundance of good central defenders. Maybe the fullbacks could be more attacking. I think the two at the moment, Lecuwe and Balenciaga, I think if you had Ander Kappa, I'm not sure what's happened to him this season. And if you had Yuri Bacici, that would give them more, you know, benefits in terms of attacking play. I think the midfield, have they got that player that can, is the midfield system right, where it's just two at the weekend? Again, it's the usual two, Danny Garcia, Unai Vencedor, who I think is brilliant. Vencedor, 20-year-old midfield player, fantastic player, box to box, a multi-purpose player. Danny Garcia does his job well. Could they find room in there for, you know, a Meunier to go in and play in that attacking midfield position in a more central role, to find someone that can make a pass, that can open up a defence, that can create those chances? Then if they're missing the chances, then we can say, oh, it's because they haven't got a centre forward. But the centre forwards don't get loads of chances. I mean, Nico Williams had the best opportunity, cuts in from the left onto his right foot, and it was saved or blocked in the end. That was the closest they came to scoring a goal. So it's not as simple as they need a striker. They need a manager that comes up with a solution that makes them more attacking, creative, and maybe relinquish some of this defensive solidity that they've got at the moment.
Yeah, take a gamble. Right, Getafe 4, Cadiz 0. Cadiz, I have seen, Terry, 53% of possession, the idiots.
Domination.
Yeah. What are they thinking? And Getafe got a thumping result there. I mean, they're still second bottom, but, you know, it pulls the rest really back into it, doesn't it?
Yeah, and gives them belief. What I'm talking about, Levante, it gives them belief. when I look at the Havente, there's a new team for you, Hetafe, that midfield three, you're not going to get relegated with that midfield three. Carlos Alenia, Aaron Bowery, Maximovic. You're not going down. Hetafe, if they changed the system, so he went with three at the back, and the attacking full attacking wing backs in Damian Suarez, Matias Oliveira. The first goal is a classic triumph for Kike Sanchez Flores. Damian Suarez crosses it. Oliveira scores at a far post with a thumping header. So there was the benefits of playing the wing backs. If I'm saying maybe Athletic could do something like that. So that was the changing system. I'm glad he kept the two up front in this game. It was Sandro and Izuno. But that midfield three, you're not getting relegated with that three in midfield, I promise you. Three quality players, and if they're fit and keep playing well, Hetafe will stay up.
Yeah.
So I think they've got enough up front, Jaime Mata. There was three headers, so this is something that Cadiz obviously got to look at. Three thumping headers, really good headers from Oliveira, Jorge Cuenca, and Enes Unal, and then Mata with one of the goals of the weekend with a fantastic volley. So the goals came late in the game, which suggests to me on the back of a previous win from Hetafe that, you know, once they got their noses in front early in the game, they were solid. And then in the last half an hour, when Cadiz had to open up a little bit more, Hetafe took full advantage of that. And it was a really, really good performance from Hetafe. And I think they're going to be onwards and upwards now. So good management, from good coaching from Kike Sanchez Flores to come up with a system which still gets him two up front. And the attacking wing backs.
You can see that difference there, can't you? First seven games, all L's, so not a single point. Next seven games, 9 points from there. So it's quite a transformation, isn't it? And as we see, you know, it's everyone well in there. Just one more game: Celta Vigo 1, Villarreal 1. So another shock draw for Villarreal. Yeah. Terry, can you believe it?
And beautiful sunshine whilst at Vigo, which is a rarity. And it's severe. We had the rain, so everything a bit lopsided on that. Celta, actually, a competitive game, and a draw was a fair result. Both teams had good spells in the game, but another draw for Villarreal.
Yeah, five away draws.
The record, you know, the record this season is they're 12th. Yeah. They've only won three. played, I think, 13 games, only won three games, three defeats.
Four away goals.
Seven draws. Yeah. I didn't realise that.
Yeah. It's an obvious problem, isn't it?
They didn't have too many chances in this game either. Yeah.
So is it the same? Are we looking at the same as you said about Athletic? It's basically the coach has got to, at some point, take a gamble, let the shackles off.
Yeah, I look at the midfield of Villarreal at the weekend. Alberto Moreno was wide on the left. Ruben Peña, who's fullback, was wide on the right. Ibora and Parejo in midfield. Trigueros was the second striker, attacking midfielder.
Yeah.
And Boulay Dia up front. So they're missing Gerard Moreno. No Paco Alcácer, who probably would have played as well if Gerard Moreno is injured. Chukwueze come off the bench. Jeremy Pino come off the bench.
Dan Juma injured.
Yeah. So in this instance, but long term, that's not been the issue. Yeah. Chukwueze has missed games this season.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've seen the emergence of Jeremy Pino. I just kind of feel that maybe the Champions League's having an effect on Villarreal.
Right. Yeah.
Because I look at the team that was picked in this game, and to me, it looks like one picked with maybe the game against Manchester United on Tuesday in mind, that one or two players weren't starting that will start in that game. A weird squad, Villarreal. Mm-hmm. Six fullbacks. Three on each side. They have seven. Ruben Peña is another one.
Yeah.
They're overloaded with fullbacks. I mean, you look at Mario Gaspar, Foyth, and Aurier has been signed. There's three right backs. You've got Estupinan on the left, Moreno, Pedraza, all left backs. Ruben Peña, another one. So it's a weird how they've assembled a squad, and they do lack depth in central midfield, I think, is the place where they possibly could have one or two more, and maybe one or two better players in midfield. Attacking positions wide, they're good. Centre forwards wide, they're good. Plenty of options there. It's just that midfield balance sometimes. In this case, Ibora and Parejo, not much energy in there in terms of getting up and down the pitch. Parejo can be creative, but Emery's got to come up with another one of those managers, come up with a solution. It surprised me they beat United, though.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think United if Carrick doesn't do anything, they're better off. If they just say bounce back from having got your manager sacked, you're a better man-for-man team than Villarreal, then United have got a chance. If they try to, I think Emery is a better coach, isn't he, than Michael Carrick now? Who knows what Michael Carrick will become? But right now, if you want a manager to plot your way through a match, you're going for Emery, aren't you?
And a draw, I guess the draw won't be the worst result for both teams.
Draw suits you. Yeah, United go through just about with a draw, don't they? I think. Well, yeah, not necessarily.
Both on 7 points.
Yeah,
Atalanta on 5.
Yeah.
So a draw gives inches them both a bit closer to qualifying. So
yeah, United are home to Young Boys, I think, the last game, aren't they? So Villarreal need the win, don't they? Yeah. There we are. If you're a Patreon, you can find out what happened. I don't think there's any other means of finding out what happened in the Champions League other than listening to us on Patreon on Friday. Join in on the Patreon. Thank you to the Patreons. Thank you to you, Terry. Thank you to everybody for listening. And we'll see you again for another podcast soon.